Hello and welcome. Today you're listening to the New Encounters podcast, where we interview some creatives and we talk about the creative process that they go through and learn a little bit about their craft. So Encounters is a Brooke-centered magazine concerned with displaying the multifaceted talents and perspectives of all of our Brooke students. So today we have Hannah.
Hello.
And yeah. My name's Violet, and I'm co-hosting with
Sahidi Kavori.
Awesome.
So welcome to our first episode on the Close Encounters podcast. And on today's episode, we are here with Hannah Lee. Hannah is a senior Bearcat and the current managing director of Encounters Magazine. Developing her craft through the usage of lyrical closed form, Hannah is a Queens-based poet. She was featured in Encounters Spring 2019 magazine for her poem, Hera.
Hera. What if Hera left Olympus and Zeus after the first affair? Can you imagine? A bob cut with streaks of light, peacock pumps clicking along her way to work at the nearest woman's shelter, where she helps the abused, the weak. No victim blaming here. Imagine the tear-filled testimony she tells at rallies, Io in a leather coat by her side, returning the favor, as she inspires women, generations earlier, that there is no reason to stay. There never was.
All right, that was a super amazing poem written by our own Hannah, and that was featured in last spring's publication of Encounters, so spring 2019. And not only do we have Hannah's poems, we have a ton of other poems featured. Can you talk about some of the other poets that we have in the magazine?
Yes. Another one of the features, who's also a close friend of mine's, Emma Lavery. She has a wonderful poem in this magazine. The title was The Honeybee Dies, one of my favorite ones. I think another poem that I really liked was by Damaris Liso.
Awesome. And what's that one about? Are these mostly nature-focused poems, or?
I would say that Emma's is nature-focused. It's
an
extended metaphor about a honeybee.
Right, and the honeybee being ourselves, our souls, our, like, lost dreams. I don't know. I feel like a honeybee is usually represented as being really hardworking or something. Is this different?
I think it has more to do with, like, the lifespan of a honeybee. And just, like, because it's a metaphor.
The short lifespan, meaning, like, we don't have a lot of time
exactly.
Oh, right, so living in the moment and really... Mm-hmm.
Like, it works its whole life gathering all this honey just to die in what's honestly a short amount of time for humans.
True. Sometimes I feel like, especially in college, we realize that in general, like, around 20 years old, it's almost like a quarter-life crisis that we have to go through. We're like, okay, so what have I done up to this point in my life? Like, what am I doing? I feel like it kind of resonates with the honeybee, because we're all trying to figure out what we want to spend the rest of our lives doing. Anyway, so I guess let's get into your process.
Okay. So, like, my writing process?
Yeah, so earlier you mentioned it's very free-flowing.
Yes. So for me, writing poetry is somewhat a spontaneous event. So I feel like a lot of people are very present when they're writing. Everything means something, or supposed to mean something, which it always does, because when you're writing, it comes from inside of you, and you're expressing some part, even if the speaker is not the author necessarily.
Right.
But I feel like while I am writing, there is kind of this disassociation while writing, and then I'll come back, I'll be in the moment, I'll be like, I did a thing. Great. There's a poem in front of me now.
So you don't have to really harp on every single word and its intended purpose. You can really focus on the entire picture of what you're doing.
Right. That stuff is for the editing process, which is, to be honest, a lot longer.
Yeah. So do you think, I guess time-wise, is it mostly, like, you write off a rough sketch of a poem in like 5 minutes maybe, and then how long do you think the editing process for that would be, like a page-long poem?
So it depends on, because it might take me some time to revisit a poem, because like I might be like, okay, I'm done with this, I don't want to look at it now. But sometimes it'll be like the next day, other times like it'll take me a week to go back to it.
Interesting.
Once I'm in the, I guess, in the zone for that, it doesn't take too long. It's more like trying to see if everything in the poem is working and doing its fair share of work, fixing grammatical errors.
Oh, so do you ever really look at an entire sentence or stanza and rethink what you were trying to say there, or kind of lose what you were trying to say in a certain sentence?
Yeah, definitely. Because I feel like in poetry, a single line is kind of like its own thought, like its own image. Sometimes it gets extended. So sometimes, like, you know, you can just scrap the whole thing if that's not the way you want to do it. Other times, I can just reframe the entire poem.
Yeah, speaking of framing, I mean, we kind of had this written down for later, but we can totally just branch into it now. The engineering of stanzas and how you break up your writing and how you fill a line or how you choose to position a stanza.
So those are all things that I feel like a poet should be aware of when writing, because the length of the line signifies something. The way you break up stanzas or how many commas there are in line breaks is a line end stopped, which is like if there's punctuation at the end of the line.
Right. Okay.
So that all kind of matters with the flow and the tone of the poem. So very short lines will indicate like a more fast pace, and it gives you kind of more of a rushed feeling. Whereas a long line, you can like really draw out the same image or like that thought process in that one line.
So would you say that more free-flowing or, like, mental states, or what would you usually associate, at least in your technique or your work, with very short stanza, almost one-word lines or, you know, five-word stanzas or something dramatic like that? What would you usually associate with that?
For that, I feel like it's usually, that usually, like, it's more impactful, first off. But also, it kind of shows you that the speaker of the poem is in this kind of mental state where there are very specific, poignant ideas that are being delivered rapid fire.
Right. They've already been thought out, and they're kind of culminating, you know, in some sort of moment. And they're having that moment with the reader.
It could be that. It could also be the opposite.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know how sometimes when you're thinking and just things are just popping out? So I guess it depends on the word, the diction of the lines.
Yeah, yeah.
But like
the
short, but like very short lines usually indicate this kind of rapid fire succession feeling.
Yeah, that's always interesting. And you were saying that some of your earlier poetry classes, you were taught a lot about how specific stanzas relate to what you're trying to say. How do you usually choose one over the other, in a sense, like how you're going to break up your writing?
So usually I don't think about it while writing.
Right, because it's just kind of ideas so like, and sentences.
But I will notice while I'm editing that I have broken up the stanzas in a specific way.
Interesting, yeah.
So there is kind of like this idea that specific line numbers and stanzas do also signify something. Like, for example, the most popular one, like a quatrain or four-line stanzas. Those are usually a lot more stable. It's grounded. Kind of like if you think of a square. It's very structured, stable.
Formatted. Right.
But as opposed to like a tercet, like a three-line stanza.
Interesting.
It's kind of a little less stable. There might be, it might be more emotions or something's not quite complete yet. And then there's also couplets. I know like there's a lot of like couplet poems like where everything is broken up into couplets. And those two-line stanzas to me is kind of like, it's a single image, or like a single point.
It's painting a metaphor or a vision of something.
Yeah, so it's very specific. Usually for shorter stanzas like that, you want to tighten the language a bit. just mm-hmm. so that you have, like, a crisper image to go off of.
Interesting. And do you often find that you lean towards a specific type of stanza in your technique or your work? Do you often... Because I think Hera is four? Is it four or five lines? I don't remember.
It's been a minute.
But in your work, do you usually lean towards a specific length?
So Hera is cut up into tercets.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I do write a lot of poetry in, like, those three-line stanzas. That might also just be because it's expressing an emotion or something that's not quite complete of a thought yet.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And does it ever have anything to do with the rhyme scheme, per se?
So I don't rhyme on purpose. Mm. It does happen. Because I think humans are just inclined to find those sounds.
So you never think of it, you're never cognizant of it while you're really making out the wording. It just kind of either happens or doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Unless I'm doing, like, a closed form, like a sonnet.
Right.
And, like, I have to.
Like a really classic.
Yeah. So, like, it won't happen on purpose, but I do a lot of, like, internal rhyming.
Mm.
Which isn't, like, rhyming the words at the end of the line, but just within the poem itself, there are words that sound similar.
Oh, so you never force yourself into alliterations, per se? Okay. I don't know. I don't really do poetry a lot, but I am obsessed with alliterations. Sometimes when I'm writing an essay, I'll just slap one in there because I think it's, like, an interesting way to end the sentence or something. It, like, packs more of a punch in the way that you read it. Do you ever find that, you know, double consonant rhyming or... something like that, where you have something strong like a K, or what else, like a, what's another strong consonant?
K, I would say maybe T.
T, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that where it really, like, catches the reader,
yep.
and you can notice it's a double or even a triple.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever find that, like, that brings something?
Yeah, so, especially if you want to, like, paint an image, like today I read a poem. And it was basically an extended metaphor about, like, the ocean and sharks. So there were a lot of S sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go, like, that kind of sounds like waves.
Oh, so it's really bringing you there and it's showing you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think there was, like, another poem where there were, like, a lot of hard, like, crisp K, hard C sounds. And sometimes in the right context, that could just give off a violent or, like...
yeah, anger.
Angry tone.
Right.
So, like, in that way, you can definitely use it. Everything's a tool.
Yeah.
All tools come in handy.
Yeah, and that, so it, symbolism doesn't have to always stem from wording or placement. Mm-hmm. It can also stem from vowels or lack
right.
of vowels.
Because I think, like, just the human mind is inclined to find those similar sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, like, an exercise we did in class once where a stone compared to a rock. Like, which one's harder? It's the rock.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, most people say that. Because you just hear those hard sounds, so it sounds harder. Whereas a stone, people usually associate it with words like smooth.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, the way your tongue or your mouth goes over that sound, it feels, like, smoother.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as,
basically,
you know, intense. Yeah, so I guess moving on to... another part of your work, do you want to discuss some of the, like, modern poetry aspects, or?
Yeah, so we were actually going to talk about the social media. So what are your thoughts on poetry and social media?
Whew. My thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts.
Let's get
I have
into
a lot of thoughts
it. Let's
about
spill it.
This in particular. So one of the biggest things for our generation, Insta-poets, Instagram poetry.
And do we often even find that we're reading Instagram poetry? Do you think we're kind of tricked into reading poetry because, you know, we see quotes that we might even already know?
Yes, there is
just
a
like
lot of
repurposed.
That.
And sips tea right on time. It's like, let's get into this.
Sips tea, spill tea.
Oh.
So, there is a lot of, like, edits people make on Instagram because... let's be real, Instagram's all about the aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take a quote from some book, put on some pretty wallpaper, and then all of a
and
sudden...
boom, you know.
Everyone's following you.
You've created something.
Because people love backgrounds.
Yeah.
But I feel like also, like, I feel like Instagram has definitely changed, like, the meaning of poetry
definitely.
For the media. Right.
Because when you're on social media, you're not ready to consume a large chunk of work.
Mm-hmm. This ends up leading to people posting poetry that's like three lines, mm-hmm. and there's like four words.
Or minimalistic.
It's very minimal.
We don't have to say minimalistic if you're just, you don't feel like writing an entire,
right.
like, you know, five-page thing.
Exactly. But the algorithm also does reward that. Because
interesting.
There was this whole thing about how the Instagram algorithm prioritizes, number one, faces. So words are kind of pushed to the bottom. So the more words your post has, the less the algorithm is likely to pick up on it.
Oh, and mm-hmm. is this words in the caption or words in the picture?
Words in the image.
Oh, so yeah. How do you feel about people, like, I feel that, at least when I'm ever, like, posting things, like, mm-hmm. with a picture, I always put it in the caption, and sometimes it's a really long caption. Does that ever come into play when you're posting your poetry on your page?
I have seen people who do that. I don't really do it because I personally don't read captions for pictures.
Yeah, it's so sad that we can't do that and the algorithm would mm-hmm. respect that more than someone who wants to incorporate it into, like, a format.
Yeah, so what a lot of people do is they end up having, like, a format for their feed. So, like, you'll have, like, a cutout piece of poetry, put it on a nice table with some flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think a lot of people are there for, like, the edit part.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just creating nice aesthetic edits.
Right, right. And what do you usually lean on personally mm-hmm. on your posts? Speaking of your posts.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Your Instagram.
Yes, follow me at JHL Wrote, past tense of write.
Wrote, uh-huh. WROTE, baby?
Yes, because one day I will be gone.
First five new followers from the podcast will receive a poem in the DMs. Will we promise this on the podcast?
Honestly, follow and then DM me saying that you came from the podcast and I will write you a
yes,
poem.
Yes, and say I came from the Encounters podcast and she will get you a poem. Mm-hmm. We have it on record. That's what's happening. And yeah, this Instagram is... So your format, you mostly rely on... Is it pictures with just like the posted poetry?
So for a while, my feed was just alternating between a black and white background and then having the
really
text
clean
be the opposite. Yeah, just
right. You're
normal.
Like, it's just poetry, guys.
So I was like,
that's it.
Just the poem. Also, got to feed the algorithm a little. So those poems are very short.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Very quotish type things.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly wouldn't call them poems. I would call them blurbs.
Yeah, yeah. And do you ever, to feed the algorithm per se,
algorithm
do you ever
monster.
The algorithm monster, do you ever like put faces in your posts to get them more?
No, because I love anonymity and I don't like looking at my face.
Oh yeah, or just like random like sketches or anything like that, do they pick up on like face sketches?
I think the AI has gotten pretty smart, so I think it can tell art.
They're
now.
Like, that's not a real person. Yeah,
scary.
Thanks.
Computers
no thanks.
Out here.
I know. Oh my God. I don't want to like go off on a tangent, but AI is getting insane.
We should fear the AI
that's for
apocalypse.
Yes.
For real, like the amount of like them listening to us like through our phones.
They know everything.
Not even like posting, just like having your phone next to you and they'll listen mm-hmm. to that, like they'll just give you recommendations.
Camera's always recording. Cause
for real.
Pictures, how does it work? Because it's always watching.
Ooh, tea. Mm. Sips.
Anyway, yeah, sips live tea on podcast. So yeah, social media affecting poetry. Do you think it's going to help or hurt the industry in the sense that it's more accessible, but it's also changing it in a way? If you're saying they're becoming blurbs?
Yeah, so it is shorter and I have seen a lot of accounts that go from just posting to actually publishing books.
Mm. Oh. Mm-hmm. What's her name?
Rupi Kaur.
For people who might not know Milk and Honey Lady, we have some tea to go with that milk and honey. So mm-hmm. you said that the authorship issue?
Yes. So someone found out that there was, I believe, a black woman poet on mm-hmm. Tumblr who I think at least a year before Rupi came out with her book had a lot of the same imagery, the type of poetry, the language, the diction, the form of the poem.
Mm-hmm.
The
was it a lot of the same context as well?
The metaphor with the milk and honey. that was also a big driving force in her poetry.
Wow.
So there are allegations that she stole the work. Of course, it's very hard to prove these kinds of things
in
the creative field.
Right, right.
But, if you read enough of it, it kind of comes apparent that there was some influence.
Yeah.
In credit what it was due.
And it, was it formatted in, I guess Tumblr's version of Instagram where she posted the imagery with the poem type thing?
Basically, yeah.
Wow. And that's just out there and people are still... Because a lot of people say that she inspired a generation of, poets or, girls on Instagram. I don't want to, put a gender to it, but people on Instagram...
Yes.
Just, putting those blurbs and, a picture or just using the poetry in their captions.
She definitely did have a very wide reach.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is a problem, in every community with, credit that's due to, especially women of color and black women especially, getting the short end of the stick and not being able to,
Not being listened to.
If they, suffer an injustice, people don't really tend to...
Weight it as much.
Yeah.
Which is... Yeah, it's horrible.
Which is sad. But the sad truth.
Yeah, and that's, one of the only pieces of, modern poetry, in a word, or published modern poetry that a lot of people think of, or that comes to mind for a lot of people, which is so sad that it's not even really given to the right author, in a sense. And not to go off on another branch, but... I feel like a while ago, everyone was saying that Milk and Honey got ripped off by the Vine version of it. After Vine died, they made a Vine version of Milk and Honey where they just did the little jokes from the Vines, and they posted it with, a little picture or something, and it was called, Vine and Honey or something like that, and they were even selling them on the internet, and everyone was saying, oh, this is copyright issues for the Milk and Honey lady. So, you know, you can't win.
That's
true. I guess.
But yeah, off talking about that. So as a poet of now, what are some things you wish to see in the future of poetry? Or what are some things that you hope to create?
I know that the current climate of poetry is shifting towards this shorter, easy to bite, free form poetry. A lot of open form. Most people nowadays don't do closed form, but I do think there is something to experience and learn from closed form poetry. Just having that tightness and structure really does change the way you write. So I mean, I'm not saying everyone should be doing closed form and that's the best part of poetry,
A healthy balance.
Yeah, I would like to see people not neglecting it, because I think a lot of people tend to think it's so conservative, and I want to express what I want to the way I want to. But it's worthwhile. It's a worthwhile endeavor, and that is mostly what I focus on.
Yeah, so incorporating... Do you ever do the... I'm trying to, describe Instagram, but you can put more than one photo and almost make a slideshow or a montage of several different photos. Do you ever do that with each stanza, where you can see one stanza in the first picture and then slide to the left and then see another?
No, I don't do that, even if I end up sacrificing the font size. Because
you always fit it on one page?
I always fit it on one page, because I think there is something... In the experience of reading, just seeing the whole poem in its entirety, the way it's meant to be presented.
So it's always you see one stanza at a time, but you also see the journey as a whole presenting itself.
Exactly.
Interesting. It's interesting, to see the specifics of technique and stuff, because oftentimes we think poetry is kind of oh, it's free-flowing, it's whatever, but, you know, there are, technicalities with it, especially when you want to transfer a specific experience to someone. How much do you really prioritize that experience, giving a specific emotion to your reader?
So, I would say I'm not really thinking about the reader when I write. Sorry to all of you out there. It's mostly about self-expression, because it is a creative outlet in the end. But there is a part of me that does want to share my thoughts, which is why I'm writing it down. And I think while crafting poems, there is a sense of trying to be aware of how I present this experience and how I want other people to be able to digest it. That's why I feel like a lot of closed forms, or it doesn't even have to be like a set closed form, just like making up rules for myself using the tools I already know. And I think that really does help build the experience.
Yeah. So really staying true to what you are trying to do and say as Hannah, and then also, you know, giving that experience, I guess, generously to the reader. It's like, oh, yeah, you get to read something I came up with, so you're welcome. But, yeah, that's great. And I guess tying it back to not only you use social media to display your work, but also in the written form, which we have a copy of. We're holding the Encounters magazine during the podcast. So I guess, like, how did you get involved with Encounters day one?
So actually, in my poetry class with Dr. Kelly, who I love.
Oh, Dr. Kelly, plug. Okay. You know, next round of class submissions, Dr. Kelly.
In her workshop class, I met Britt, who was the previous managing editor
of Encounters. Yes.
So during class, we would basically write a poem every week, every other week. And towards the submissions deadline, she told us all to submit, and then I did.
Oh, so Britt did or Kelly?
Britt.
Awesome. Did she, like, go up and she advertised, like, hey, everyone's really great in this room. Everyone should apply to this magazine. Thank you very much.
Basically, that's what's happened.
And then from there, did you just submit? And then did you see a lot of the creative process that first time submitting, or was it afterwards?
I would say afterwards. First time I submitted, I got the email back that it was confirmed that I'm being featured. So because I wasn't really in Encounters magazine at the time, I was just being featured, kind of like this outside guest, so to speak.
Right.
So I didn't really get a sense of the process until afterwards.
Yeah, a lot of the editing and
position. Yep.
Yeah. That's definitely a big, like,
responsibility.
Exactly. Like formatting all of that. But it's great. It's a great community of people, very open-minded, a lot of ideas getting thrown around. Yes. Oh, and this semester, at least, or this year, David B. is running it, running the marketing side of it, at least. And he said that our next zine, the immigration zine, is coming out soon, coming out in print. So grab one. This is... I guess we're not we're sponsored by them, so we're, like, plugging them. The immigration zine, it's going to be really cool. It's going to have kids from that go to Baruch in, like, you know, they're, like, discussing their heritage and stuff like that, and it's really cool. In their mode, but yeah.
Yeah, so let's go and talk about you a little more.
Wow.
So, can you tell us a little bit about the first time you actually remember writing poetry? Was that, like, in your elementary school? Was it, like, sitting around a table with your
I don't know if
friends?
It's the first time, but the first time I remember is for a middle school assignment and me going, wow, I hate this. Poetry is so dumb.
Relatable.
I also had this thing where I feel like everyone goes through this at one point when they're starting off. Like, public school education, for some reason, really likes to emphasize the importance of centering your poems.
Oh, centering them in the middle of the page?
Yes.
I for sure remember that. It was very annoying.
That was a thing, and I was like, this looks weird.
It does.
Why are we doing this?
The comma is, like, all the way on the right side of the page, and the period is, like...
I have to go all the way back, but also the lines are jagged.
Yeah, it's very unappealing. Time. Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know why they made us do that.
So for a while, I thought, oh, that's what poetry is. It's a bunch of lines all centered, and that looks whack.
Yeah.
And then I learned, no, it's usually not centered, unless you want it to be for a specific purpose, for form issues.
Oh.
But, yeah, I think I got more into poetry once I was in high school. Yes. Junior year of high school, Townsend Harris, I took AP Literature with Mr. Canzoneri.
Mr. Canzoneri. Okay. Another plug. Another plug. But yeah, so teachers are a really pivotal part of becoming a poet.
They are, because I don't think anyone's born and goes, poetry, that's exactly what
I'm because there's so much technicality and language. And
I feel like there's something about society that just says, poetry? That's dumb. We don't need poetry.
And I think you learn a lot about the importance through your mentors.
So in high school, I got a taste of, like, real poetry.
And so what were some of the poets that you were reading in high school that really, like, ignited you as a poet?
My favorite one, he's very old, John Donne.
John Donne, two N's?
Two N's.
D-U-N-E. And perfect.
Plug.
D-O-N-N-E. Yeah, he's from the 16th century, I think.
Wow. Oh, and is his stuff very, like, Middle English? Or is it digestible?
No. Well, they print editions now that are digestible English. Oh, kind of like Shakespearean level.
Yeah,
English.
Like, broken down in, like,
he
modern
had
English.
The weird spelling English.
Oh, old-timey with, like, weird caps and, like, weird no letter at the end of a word.
Like, cook instead with an of E. An I, maybe there's a Y. There are two E's. For some reason, sun.
I find that so spicy because as someone who hates spelling things correctly, whenever I read old-timey English where the spelling is just like no rules, you know, this is English doesn't exist, we're just writing in what we think is like the language with no spelling rules, then I feel way better about myself. I'm like, wow, they don't have to spell correctly, neither do I.
That means I don't have to spell correctly.
Exactly. Empowering.
Yeah. So I think I was reading the Holy Sonnets by John Donne.
Oof.
Number 10. My favorite poem to this day. Also opened up the world to metaphysical poetry.
Metaphysical poetry?
Yeah.
Is that when you get into your trance, like, state and you kind of write more free-flowing?
No, that's when every comma is there for a reason.
Okay, and is that, like, every pause, you stop and you have to introspect?
So there's a play that revolves around this poem, like a whole play. It's called Wit. But instead of an I, it's a semicolon.
They did that.
They did that.
Okay.
And the whole thing centers up around, like, this professor who's dying of cancer. And she's thinking back about how she got into this line of work. And in college, she had this experience where her professor called out her report for using the wrong version of the poem. Because she was like, if you see in this the poem you chose in this edition that you used, instead of having a comma, you have a semicolon, and that's wrong. And she's just like, it's punctuation, there's a pause, it's fine. And the professor's professor goes into this whole thing about, so the line I think is, and death shall be no more, semicolon, death, capital D, thou shalt die, exclamation point.
So death shall die.
Mm-hmm. So that was supposedly the wrong version, because it was supposed to be, and death shall be no more, comma, death, lowercase d, thou shalt die, period. And it's kind of like this idea about how the comma separates the speaker from death.
Oh, okay.
Life, death, and then life everlasting. Oh. There was a lot of Christian stuff in that poem.
Oh, so it's just, because from what I know of semicolons, it's more of a break in the sense of listing. So
it can be used that way.
If you want to list a bunch of different things, you can semicolon a sentence, and then the phrase is separated by that. But you can also do, like, more statements with a semicolon?
Yes, with a semicolon you can connect two independent sentences that can stand alone, but you want to relate them together.
Oh, that's why the death is connected to, like, you are no more, and then death is no more.
But the whole idea is, if it's a comma, it's kind of undermining, like, the power of death. It's nothing but a short pause. Because there's life, a comma, and then life everlasting.
And so life is but a comma in death the grand scheme of literature. That's such an interesting way to look at it. Because we find that life is the whole item, but what if it's just a brief pause in between, you know, the two darknesses that are eternal pre-life and eternal death? Not to get extremely existential, but, you know,
do that every day.
Yeah, like, I don't know. That's why I find importance in, like, sitting in certain moments. Like, sitting, that before the podcast, we all sat for a second and just savored the moment of pre-podcast. I don't know. It was a little comma moment.
I like that.
But comma corner. A little comma corner.
But, yeah. So what is, like, your setting when you write a poem?
Yes, so, again, poetry is very spontaneous for me. So I could be, I don't know, chilling at a cafe. I could be at home, lying in my bed, and a thought comes to me, and then I whip my phone out, and I'm like, I need to write this.
Ah, you type it on your phone.
That's if I have nothing else.
Do you ever, like, speak it into your phone because it's coming to your mind so fast that you just yell it into your cell phone?
No, because speaking takes longer for me than writing.
Really?
Yes. I have a very giant filter between my brain and my mouth, but not between my brain and my hand.
Wow. I'm so envious. Wow.
Mind shattered.
I know. I mean, how long does it take you to type? I feel like I type so slow.
Yeah. I mean, I type pretty fast, but
I guess
I feel like no. No, but
I'm like 40 words a minute. Or no. Yeah, like 40 a minute. Very slow.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. That's why I often do speech. Like, I will, like, yell at my laptop or my phone, and I'll be like, say this, because I talk pretty fast.
It might be because there was, like, this weird $10 computer program when I was a kid.
Mavis Beacon?
I'm not sure, but it was, like, practicing typing.
I remember that. No, something like that.
Mavis Beacon, bro. We had to do that in school. I had to take an extra class of Mavis Beacon. And you played games where you had to type a certain word, and then you'd level up, and then you'd have to type sentences, and you had to not look at the keyboard, and you were timed.
Yep. That was my favorite thing in school.
Yeah. Really? That was my least favorite class.
Now I can type without looking at a keyboard.
As you should.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I know where all the keys are. I can't recite them, but muscle memory.
I was typing on a keyboard that had the letters wiped off because it was so old, and I freaked out. I freaked out. I was looking around. I was like, that's a C, and it would come out as an X, and I was like, I'm trapped.
What did you do?
Took a long time. But yeah, so speech is more time for you.
Yes, that might be why I like to write.
Interesting.
Better form of communication as opposed to all the other ones.
So how do you feel about performing your work live? Or, like, verbally?
I haven't.
You haven't done any spoken word? Well, no. Technically you did some on the podcast.
Yeah.
This was weird. Your first spoken word.
I've read my poems in class because I'm getting a grade, but
it just makes her a little sweaty.
Other than that, like, this is my first time.
Wow, look at that. Celebration.
You guys are all here on this journey with me. Thank you.
Yes. We love this. It's a safe space. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, but for Hera, actually, that was one of my most spontaneous poems that I've ever written.
Really?
I still remember it because it was such a weird thing. I was going home from Baruch. It was very dark because I was here late. I don't remember why.
Just one of those bad classes.
Just one of those days.
Just staying late.
So I was walking home. It's kind of, you know, when it's misting, but it's not enough to, like, be worried.
Like, it's, like, foggy?
No, like, there's water coming down from the sky. But, like,
but it's not going, it's not going fast.
Anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was just walking down, and I was like, huh, what if Hera left Zeus? And I was like, that could be a poem.
Wow.
And then I whipped my phone out while I was walking home in the dark, and I started writing a poem.
Wow. So while walking?
Yep.
Wow.
And then once I got the whole thought out of my head, I was like, okay, we're done. Goodbye.
And you're like, it's over.
It's over.
Like,
it's over for everyone.
And then I went back to it a bit after, edited it up.
So you always give yourself a little breathing room to sort of separate yourself contextually from the work, or why is that usually?
I think it's easier to catch mistakes if you give it some time. Mm-hmm. You know, let the poem marinate a bit, see how you feel about it afterwards. Because there's also this thing where when you're writing and editing in the same space, you're still in, like, that same mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be less inclined to change or edit things.
Mm-hmm.
That might not work, but you think it works. Because you just wrote it, and why wouldn't it work?
Exactly. You're like, oh, I know what I mean.
Like, I just did this.
Right.
I can't question that.
I am the ultimate authority on this piece.
But, like, next day, I'll be like, yesterday's Hannah was a dumbass. We're fixing this.
Exactly. Also the same, do you ever do the backwards reading, where when you're trying to fix spelling, you read what you wrote backwards, and then you I just have to do that all the time. Because I can't edit my own stuff unless I read it backwards. Because when you're reading it forwards, your brain pieces together the patterns. You're like, this the has T-H-E, it's fine. You know? So if you want to read it backwards, your brain is forced to slow down and read the, like, that's spelt wrong. You know? That's the only reason I'm in college. That's how I made it this far.
But... yeah, so can you talk to the concept of creator's block when you don't have a misty setting that's helping you write?
I would say most of my life is creative block, and then I come
the moments in between. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, it is hard if you want to make something and you can't. I usually don't run into that for poetry. I think usually with prose that happens a lot.
Oh, and the distinction of prose and poetry is prose just longer format or in sentence format?
Prose, I would say, first of all, prose has to follow our English grammar rules. So like things like fiction or like writing that is not poetry is all prose.
Interesting.
But then within the realm of poetry, and I do think some people abuse this, you don't have to conform to the rules of language.
Oh, interesting. Hmm.
So it's more creative. It's like painting a picture, but with words.
Yeah, with artistic license.
And things don't have to go where they have to. I have certainly used colons wrong.
Hey, you know what? We're not gonna be the ones to sit here and lecture you about it.
But like, as long as it's doing the work, it's fine.
And yeah, as long as it's getting the job done. Mm-hmm. And do you ever feel that you want to create a certain pause or space for the like reader to like, you know, stop between a stanza or something, but you don't have the linguistic accessibility for that or tool for that?
No.
Like, do you always have, like, a tool in your repertoire? Like, what do you usually rely on?
So, because everything has a specific purpose, to me, at least, when I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if I want to put in an extra space there, that's, like, breathing room or, like, to stop and think for a second. If I want to explain something further or, like, extend something, I will put in that many more words. Or I might the whole structure of the poem different. I have had times where if... it's not doing the work it's supposed to, I will basically disassemble the poem and then put it back together.
Whoa. Speaking of disassembling, in the office I saw you hung up your, I forget the exact word of it, but you highlight...
oh, the erasure poem. I don't know who hung it up, but I did see it was on the wall.
Yeah, so I find that an interesting way to combine... some sort of design or color theory or something like that with what you choose to mark out the article with. And what did you call it again?
Erasure poetry.
Eraser poetry. So erasure. You can... erasure?
Yeah.
Erasure.
Eraser poetry.
Eraser poetry. So, like, you just cross out all of the words that you don't want to. You just have from, like, any type of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you just select the words that you want to keep. And then... those words are the poem. So it's almost a poem out of negative space.
It's like a collab.
Yeah.
So, like, you're using these words that have already been written in another context.
Mm-hmm.
And using the limited words you've been given.
Yeah, recontextualizing.
Give it new meaning. New
exactly.
Purpose.
And it's a little mix of, like, randomization, but also meaning, because you can kind of create that.
Right, because, like, you have the choice for what you want to, like, be working with.
Interesting, yeah, because you can choose whatever article. In your case, you chose your own interview, which was kind of cool too. And you can also choose what you choose to erase erase the other work in. Like, you chose like the green to match the rest of the article, but you could kind of choose whatever you wanted to block out the rest of the writing with.
Yep,
which is kind of an interesting bleed through to another art form or even. Visual expression.
Yeah, because, like, for the one hanging in the office, I just chose a green Sharpie because the page was green and color association.
It matches, bro.
It matches. I've been doing this since I was 8. But, like, I have done... there was... the English department had an event. It was just, like, a poetry event.
And a little workshop?
Everyone was there. They're just doing erasure poetry. Dr. Kelly was
there. That's so chill.
Dr. Kelly.
Plug.
There you are.
Yet again.
So there I got to be a little more creative because there was, like, more time and a lot more supplies. So, like, you could white things out.
Mm-hmm.
You could Sharpie it if you're really in the mood to scribble.
Mm-hmm.
I also did this thing where we had, like, several magazines and old books. So I took a picture from a magazine, and then I cut out holes so that the words from the text I glued underneath it would show up, and that would read as a poem.
Oh, interesting. So it's also mixing, like, photography or magazine pictures or any type of other imagery that you really want to display within the work to show up. Yeah,
like, they work together, and then it's this new collage, I suppose.
Almost a collage, yeah, pretty much. And,
yeah, so... So, what is a piece of advice you would give to an up-and-coming artist or a newbie?
Yeah, like an artist in general, I guess. Yeah. On, like, self-expression, as you said, with your work.
I guess I would say, don't be afraid and don't hold back.
Oh, of judgment?
Of everything, because I feel like there is this idea that you have to be artistic, and you have to have some kind of deeper meaning of why you're creating. But you don't really need to justify that, because there's a reason why you're creating.
Yeah, and how do you feel about the conversation of originality? You know, I guess this comes back to citation and other people's work, but trying to be the most original breakthrough artist in, I guess, whatever type of medium that might include, but trying to really break the mold, how important do you think that is?
I honestly believe, especially in this day and age, originality does not exist.
Interesting.
We are all influenced, and we're all constantly exposed to information.
We're absorbing all the time.
Always absorbing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't say that none of that has affected you in the way you create.
Right, right.
But it's just like when you're getting influence from one particular source extensively, I would say that's when, like... You might want to.
Right. So, in the sense of Milk and Honey, that's like way too much from another author.
Like, just saying, like, this is an imitation of that.
Right.
Is fine. Because you're creating your own work while acknowledging the fact that you're building on top of this pre-existing work.
Right. I think acknowledgement needs to be, I guess, more respected in the community, and people should like look back on what they've been inspired by and even cite it so that other people who really appreciate what they're doing specifically can look through another artist's work and learn more, because it's such a community where like people can really learn more about things, because everyone's always like, oh, I'm not quite sure, you know, who to base whatever work on, but sometimes people just don't even know, like they haven't really done their research to look back on other people that they've been inspired by, but it's not even really being inspired. It's just kind of like taking from something they don't realize.
Yeah, I feel like people are kind of afraid that they won't come off as original. There is kind of like that baseline fear, like, oh, I have to be different, I have to be an individual. But we already are individuals, so there's no need to stress over that. If you create something with the intention of being inspired, that's fine. That's totally valid. And it doesn't make you any less of a creative for working on top of something else that you really liked. Because it obviously spoke to you in a specific way.
It has resonance. And if it has resonance for you, it could have resonance for others.
Yes. A great example of how to acknowledge and give credit where it's due. Terrence Hayes, a wonderful poet. We actually read him for class.
Terrence Hayes, what type of poetry does he usually...
So, the book we read in class was, I think, sonnets. Hold up.
Sonnets?
It was an American sonnet. So, sonnets are usually very closed form, but it was kind of adapted in a way where it doesn't do that, like, all of the same. Because, like, the original sonnets are very strict. By the eighth line, you have to have a turn because it's the volta. It wasn't quite that.
Just terminology. And a volta, is that...
So, old sonnets, there's this breakup of an octet and a sestet. So there are eight lines, a turning point, and then the six lines. So the turning point can be like the eighth or the ninth line.
Similar to a haiku in the sense that the stanza changes? Like the line amount changes?
It's like the way you
break up the stanza, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Because
okay.
haiku is just a singular one word. Yes. Okay, I have it here. American Sonnets for My Past and Future Assassin. Go read it. It's amazing. But
yeah.
He invented a new poetry form.
Really?
Called The Golden Shovel. Mm-hmm.
The Golden Shovel.
Because it was based off of another amazing poet, Gwendolyn Brooks' mm-hmm. poem, Golden Shovel, where he took her entire poem, took every word, and each word was the last word for his, the last word in the line for his new poem.
Oh, so it's taking, is it taking a similar theme to what she was saying, or context, or was it just using her rhyme scheme in a sense?
I think there was some kind of connectedness in the theme. And it was also, like, highlighting, like, the accomplishments of this wonderful black woman poet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think, like, in that sense, like, it doesn't make his work any less original. And it's also showing, like, this collaborative process that we all share in the community.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a much healthier way to use someone else's work mm-hmm. versus just kind of stealing their yeah. technique and their, mm-hmm. Like, type of poetry, like, we saw in Milk and Honey.
Yeah.
Yet we come back to it again.
Yeah, but I feel like also, so what are your opinions on to the extent at which great artists steal?
The lines are so thin mm-hmm. and it's so hard to figure it out. I think when you know where the influence is coming from and you still refrain from sharing that, mm-hmm. that's kind of, if you're hiding something, it's because you're ashamed of something.
And do you find this applies more to technique, like the type of poetry that you write or how you choose to express it? Because I feel like there's only so many different variants of, you know, the written type of word or how people choose to format their poetry, I guess, more in specifically. But do you think that also applies to how you choose to express yourself? Or, like, what you're trying to say? Mm. Like, if you're kind of stealing, in one example, the same theme or, I guess in that example of poetry, mm-hmm. Like, their experience. If you're stealing someone else's experience, it's much more intense.
It is hard just because it's so, like, anyone could share the same experiences.
Mm.
But I guess people do just naturally end up noticing if there's too much of a similarity. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, at one point is it just influence, and at one point is it, like, actively mm-hmm. stealing someone else's work? It is very subjective, but I do feel like if a lot of the aspects, and especially, like, with taking another experience, it does become a bit apparent, especially if, like, the wording is the
mm-hmm,
same.
Because,
mm-hmm. like, I think the thing with that book in particular, it's a lot about, like, the hardships and struggles of women.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very easy to say that as a woman, everyone could have gone through that. And I think that's
right.
why it also had such a big impact.
It was vague enough mm-hmm. for it to apply to a mass amount yes. of young women or women in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is also a type of poetry I don't like. When it's too vague.
Too vague. Mm. I guess, yeah, like, the same thing can go for, like, minimalist type of expression.
Mm-hmm.
At what point is it really expression, and at what point is it just following some type of, you know, general idea yeah. and just kind of trying to aestheticize that or encapsulate it?
Yeah, because, like, especially a lot of poetry nowadays, it does have to do with, like, power to women, which is great. We need more of that. But it all follows that same kind of theme where, like, that man wasn't good enough for her. She left, and now she's strong, independent.
Mm. It's not really working with
yeah,
men
and since
incongruency.
It's so vague, it doesn't feel like it's coming from this particular experience, but it's kind of more like preaching out this idea
mm-hmm.
that is known to be widely accepted and
mm-hmm.
popular at the moment.
Right. Like a type of feminism where it's like we can rise above the need for men instead of cooperating in a healthy way.
Yeah.
And just, like, coexisting in that
there
type
is
of
also
way.
There's a male poet who's very famous on Instagram, and I'm not going to name him.
Oh.
Because I don't want haters.
Oh. Not on this podcast.
No. So, I find it weird about how he, as a man, is talking about the problems women face.
in relationships, and that's whack.
So he is just characterizing himself as a, like, female going through female struggles in writing?
Hold on, let me find the receipts.
The receipts.
It's Libra season, and that means it's I got the receipts season.
Libra season, we were just talking about this, heavy karma vibes coming through.
Coming back.
So I guess it's early Christmas, everyone. If you've been naughty, it's coming for you. If you've been nice, you're fine.
Because Libra is all about scales, the balance, it's coming back.
Ah.
Yes. Let's see. That's something short. You must love yourself more than these people claim they do.
And that's it?
That's the whole thing.
Okay.
Broken up into four lines.
That's definitely a blurb.
A social media problem.
Okay. Or like, you're too good for someone who isn't sure about you. That's the kind
that's
of advice
so
I get from my friends.
That's very blanket. Yeah.
It is. It's like a lot of these blanket statements for problems literally everyone goes through.
Right, right. Well, we have a couple minutes left, and I guess we want to finish the episode with a small podcast art class, ? It's going to be something we kind of do every podcast episode. But wherever you may be, wherever you're listening to today's podcast, if you happen to have a pen and a paper, let's take that out, and I'm just going to give us some very vague instructions, and then everyone who listens to this podcast will have their own piece of art. Oh, let's get that zipper ASMR right up on the mic.
ASMR time.
Wow. Amazing noises. Ew. I love these microphones.
Okay.
yeah, so everyone, let's just start wherever you want to on the paper, but let's start with a little medium horizontal line. You can make it as straight, as wobbly as you want, whatever you're feeling today. So then you can take that horizontal line and make a tiny loop at the end. You can connect it. You don't have to, though. And then you can just swoop down. Kind of down, whatever direction you want. You can get pulled to the left, pulled to the right, and then just lift your pen up. Just lift it up and then pick another part of the paper. Just somewhere. It could even be on top of the line you've already done. It's really up to you. Just choose another area and just draw a little circle. Oval. You can make a dip in the center. You can make it look like a C. And then you can just finish that up. And then just do a little, pick a corner of your circle or just organic shape that you've made and just do a little shading on it. Just do a little shading in whatever color utensil you've chosen to use. And you can take that shading and just bring it out of the shape entirely. And then do a little, you know, dark shape emerging. And then after you're done shading, just soften the edges so that you have a shape coming out of another shape. And then I'm going to do a little soft on the sides so that it looks a little clean. But you can leave it if you want to. You don't have to make it super clean. And then we're going to go to another part of the paper and just draw some parallel lines. I'm doing 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now, they can be as long or as short as you want, but you can take these lines and draw another line, either crossing through them or going around them. But either way, you can make that line connect at both ends. So you can either have a shape inside your lines, outside your lines, around your lines, and then you can choose to make lines coming out of it as well. I'm putting a little box at the corner of mine, but hey, that's just how I'm feeling today, so, you know, it's up to you. And you can leave that box blank. I'm going to decide to shade mine in. But yeah. This is, you don't know what mine looks like, but everyone's, can name theirs whatever they're feeling today. I'm feeling congested. Congested. Number one. Because today's our first episode. All right, that's it. hope everyone feels pretty happy with their piece. And so everyone gets an art piece out of today's episode, because creativity stems exactly from the individual and also from the community around us. Thank you so much for tuning in.
And yeah, so with your mini art class product, you could also post and tag us at Encounters Mag.
Encounters Mag on Instagram.
And also, definitely DM us on your thoughts and suggestions for the podcast for future episodes. Also, stay tuned to our stories and our posts.
Yeah, and thank you guys so much for tuning in. And thank you, Hannah.
Thank you, Hannah.
Come see me at our Encounters workshop that I'm going to be hosting in October.
Awesome. Yeah. So you can get to meet the poet. Poetress herself.
And
spit some lines. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Yeet.